Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
This is Margaret McCall. You're listening to Business Life Works, the show that guides you and coaches you on using the harmonic matching process to create a fulfilling life, to create fulfilling relationships, and to also work on disagreements, to have a way, a process to align with others and to be very thoughtful in how you disagree. And since that is such an important topic, I wanted to bring in an author, Philip Blackett, to speak with us today. He's the author of the book, Disagree Without Disrespect, How to Respectfully Debate with Those Who Think, Believe, and Vote Differently from You. And Philip has a five-step process that he will share with us today. Let me give you a little more information about this incredible man. He's a speaker. He's done amazing things. So, Philip, are you with me?
Hey, Margaret. Nice to see you here. Thanks for
having me. Yeah, I just want to check in with you. So Philip Blackett is an author, consultant, and entrepreneur who previously has worked with FedEx, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and Chick-fil-A. Those are big companies, Philip. He got his Master's of Divinity degree from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, his MBA business degree from Harvard Business School, and his bachelor's degree majoring in political science and economics from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So, Philip, you know, this is such an important topic. Today, we're so hesitant to share a different viewpoint on any issue due to fear of being isolated from loved ones, condemned on social media, or even unfriended. And, Philip, I know you're on a mission to change this intimidating cancel culture that lacks diversity of thought by reintroducing the rules of engagement that we've lost. So I'm looking forward to this conversation with you today on your process and your work on dealing with disagreeing respectfully. So first, why don't you just share with us how you got involved with this topic? What inspired you to write this book?
Yeah, so, you know, I think for me, I tend to believe that the quality of our lives is often measured by the quality of our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so one part of it that's really important to me is family. And the book actually came from a family get-together during the 4th of July holiday last year, where basically I had invited my sister and her family, invited my mother. We all got together as far as a family together. And the adults were in the living room. My sister and I were talking about something, and quite honestly, Margaret, I don't remember exactly what the topic was. All I know is that we were on opposite ends of the spectrum on this issue. Mm-hmm. And as we were starting to have a debate, some would say discussion, you know, tomato, tomato, but my mother jumps in, and she basically tries to officiate the conversation, almost like a referee, but without the zebra shirt and whistle, of course.
Okay.
And she basically said, listen, we're not going to have this. We have fireworks planned later on tonight. I have no intention of seeing fireworks happen right now between you two. And while I can appreciate the intent behind what my mom did, as far as trying to preserve the peace with, you know, in the family, I think the impact, Margaret, from this was it was a lost opportunity.
Yeah.
It was a lost opportunity for my sister and I to get to know each other. It was a lost opportunity for me to share what was important to me, listen to what's important to her, and be able to share that. Because in a world with, you know, smartphones, social media, text messages, I think you would probably agree with me, some conversations are better had face-to-face in person.
Yes, for sure.
And that was an instance where that opportunity did not take place. And so what was going on in my mind in retrospect was, if that happened with me, I wonder how many other people around the world are having similar moments where they can't authentically be themselves, connect with those that they love and care about, out of fear of a disagreement taking place and not being able to handle that and navigate it in a way that's respectful for one another and still use it as a growing opportunity for further connection. And so that's mm-hmm. what had me think about what needs to change for that to happen, not just for myself, but for other people. And that's what came out with this five-step framework, which then later came out with this book, Disagree Without Disrespect.
Okay. Well, it is such an important topic. I think all of us have been in a room at a family gathering or a friend gathering where there's been a disagreement, and perhaps two people did know how to disagree or respectfully, but perhaps they did not. And even if they do know how to disagree respectfully, I think it creates an anxiety in the room because we've all been around situations where people have been disrespectful. So people get on edge and concerned, like, oh my, what is this going to lead to, you know? So I can appreciate this topic and think it's extremely important for people personally in their homes as well as in the work setting. So thank you for the effort that went into writing this book, the thought that went into it, and I think things are always best when there's a personal connection to what we write about. So really appreciate the effort here. So
absolutely.
Why don't you give us a sense of the five-step framework where people can disagree with one another and be respectful?
Absolutely. So step one is separate the idea or belief from the identity of the believer.
Hmm.
And why that's important is oftentimes, depending on the issue, depending on the person, you may come across someone who's very much intertwined with an idea that it becomes essentially who he or she is. And the challenge behind that, Margaret, is if you're showing that you're disagreeing a certain idea or belief in that situation, that person may take it personal because it's seen as you're attacking who they are. That's a critique. Mm-hmm. That idea is almost like you are hating on that person. And so they're more likely to get defensive, raise their wall up, and even try to protect themselves, their ego, try to save face, and come after you, because it seems like you're coming after them, even though that's not the issue at hand.
Right. Okay. Yes. So separate the idea from
the identity of the believer.
Identity of the believer. So that really manages the emotions, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds good. So that's step one. What's step two?
Step two is disagree with the idea or belief and respect and love the believer.
Got it.
Why that's important is oftentimes we live a life that to love someone is contingent on us agreeing with them on everything. And so my thought is I've been married for 8 years at this point. If that was the case for me, that for me to be with my wife for as long as we have, that I have to agree with her on everything, we wouldn't have made it past the honeymoon stage, let alone the wedding planning stage altogether.
Right.
And so for a lot of us, it's helpful to know that two things can be true. I can have a different way of viewing this topic or issue, and I can still respect who you are as a person, as a parent, as a colleague, as a friend, as a spouse, that still is intact, even though we don't see eye to eye on this one issue.
Right. You know, that is an important point. I've heard so many people, when they talk about politics, put the other person, not necessarily put them down, but put their ideas down. And
right.
That respect, once that happens, the conversation, of course, just goes downhill, spirals downhill, and, of course, becomes very emotional at that point. And so do you have a tip before we go into the other steps, you know, for people to be very cautious not to say, well, anybody who believes this is crazy, or how can anyone believe this or that, right? Because that's
right.
The kind of comments that really takes that conversation to a new negative direction, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, you're basically, you know, that comment may seem innocuous to you, but that can put me at odds where I feel at it on edge, as you said before, where these first steps, if nothing else, is trying to bring about a safer space for us to be vulnerable, a safer space for us to be honest and open. And if that's not the case, then we can't possibly go into the next step talking about actually debating the issue at hand.
Mm-hmm. What's the third step?
So once you actually set the groundwork with the first two steps, step three is you debate the issue at hand based on its merits. And by merits, I'm meaning, you know, let's consider the facts, the logic, the research, the analysis, the performance, the reviews, the results. We try to make it as close to an apples-to-apples comparison as objectively as we possibly can as possible. Because what we don't want to get involved with, Margaret, is we don't want to get involved with name-calling.
No.
Because to my short experience, the moment when a debate gets into name-calling, then the debate is over.
Right.
There's no more discussion at that point. Now it's personal on both sides, and that's not going to be fruitful.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Sure. Well, and that's just name-calling is obviously just so disrespectful.
Right.
So, okay, so debate the issue at hand based on its merit. All right, we're going to come back and let you give examples for some of this. What's step four?
So step four is once we actually have a debate, you know, when all is said and done, we should exhibit what we had done when we were playing sports when we were younger. So essentially, when we finish a game, win or lose, whether your team won or your team lost, regardless if you see things my way or I change to your side of the view, we agree to disagree, or some third alternative we weren't expecting in the first place happens altogether as a byproduct of us talking about it. At the end of the day, we should be like we did in youth sports. We shook hands, and we said, good game. Or in this instance, thank you for the debate. Thank you, Margaret, for the conversation. Good sportsmanship can still be had when we're adults and when we have debates amongst each other. Because no one really loves a sore loser at the same time that no one really loves a sore winner as well.
Right, right. Good point. Okay, I like that. So what's step five? I would think this might be the end of it, but what's the fifth? It's follow-up?
Yeah, so as you've opened the debate, right, you set the groundwork, you have the actual debate, now you're closing the debate. Step five is essentially respecting and appreciating the person you just debated or had this discussion. And even if you still see things differently, that's fine. That's a part of having diversity of thought in your relationship. But more importantly, keep the door open for continued conversation.
Okay.
If you want to get more into it, talk about it at a different, you know, time, maybe over a coffee or lunch or dinner, maybe there's an event that happens on the speaker on that same topic, you can go together and conversate about it afterwards. But essentially what happens is you don't treat this as a one-off transaction, because hopefully we have the mindset that the relationship between one another is more important for us to build on rather than who's right or who's wrong.
That's a good point. Yes, it is, for sure. Well, you know, when you work with this five-step process, Philip, do you have any examples of coaching somebody through it? Maybe an example of, you know, or yourself, you know, how they would go through each step, what the disagreement was or what the conversation was, and then how you would coach them through it. Any examples?
Yeah, so I think a few examples come to my mind where, you know, I've talked to somebody and said, hey, let's go through this framework, almost like, you know, a professional, like you're reviewing tape of your past performance, right? It's more so the sense of saying, hey, like, first things first, what is the objective of what you're trying to get out of this conversation or debate? Is it truly about trying to assert yourself as right over the other person or superior in your way of thinking versus the other person? Or is it more so information sharing? They asked about your position, you shared it, and then you learned about the other person. Like, getting clear about what you are trying to accomplish is helpful, because if you get back into that conversation again, even if things get personal or get a little bit nasty, for lack of a better word, you can at least try to bring the conversation back to what you were trying to accomplish. Meaning, listen, Margaret, I notice things are starting to get a little bit tense between us. I just want to remind you, like, I'm not looking to get into a back and forth with you. I really just want to share where I'm coming from since you asked me. And I love to learn in return how you think about it and just have a respectful conversation about that.
Right.
And if we can do that, great. If it's something that we feel like we can't do, that's okay. We can elect not to talk further about this.
Mm-hmm.
But you're essentially putting the ball back in the other person's court to say, hey, I got clarity on what's important for Philip here and what he wants to have with me. And then I now can elect either to go down that route with him and try to keep this more respectful and continue the conversation, or I can elect not to want to do that, and we just move on to something else.
Right, right. So this brings up the whole subject of texting. People tend to text, not everyone, but text sometimes disagreements or their frustrations, and that needs to be discussed. Because I have to say, there's nothing I dislike more than to get a text message from somebody that shows they're frustrated or upset about something, or they have a disagreement of any kind. Instead of maybe texting to say, hey, I've got some things I need to talk about with you, can we set up some time to discuss these things together? And it can't always be done in person, because sometimes people are in different states, you know, they're in different places. But it can certainly be done over the phone or over Zoom or, you know, some online platform. What do you have to say about the method that is used to debate?
Yeah, so I think about it. I agree with you, Margaret. I think text message is probably, in today's society, the worst way to go about debates or differences of opinions. And I would venture to say texting, a close parallel to that, is the comment section of any social media platform.
Right? Yes.
Because you are essentially sharing your viewpoints via text, but the way you're going about it is one that I think is not as fruitful or helpful versus, like you said before, either being in person face-to-face, or the closest proxy to that, yeah, we have FaceTime, we have Zoom, we have other ways of getting in front of a video camera that we can have that sort of conversation, because body language is an important part of communication that's missing when you're just on the phone. So ideally, we would like to see each other. But at the very least, it's also better to be on the phone than on text, because phone, you at least have not only the words you're saying, but also the tonality and how you're going about saying it. That's an important part of what you're trying to convey to somebody in communication. Versus just text, all you're dealing with is words, and the only emotions you can get out of that is that people put like 18 exclamation points at the end if they're upset, or some sort of emoji in that sort too. But that's still the lowest level of communication still.
Right, right. Absolutely. I think, you know, it just leaves so much room for miscommunication or irritation, or, you know, oftentimes when I've seen text messages like that, either to myself or somebody else or to a coworker or whatever, people forget about taking responsibility for their feelings, and they tend to get into a blame mode, is what I've witnessed. You did this, or you did that, or whatever. Instead of, let's discuss, it's not a discussion. It's, I just want to send you a message, you know, or put on paper how I feel without, you know, even necessarily being interested in another perspective. So that leads to a number of things. There's so many different skill sets when you think of good communication, debating, disagreements, being able to come to a better place. One is active listening. We're going to come back to that, though, because we're going to take a break soon, and I don't want to get caught up in the middle of, you know, that discussion, because I think that's an important point. But what other skill sets besides the listening skill sets would you say are needed? And then we'll kind of, you know, we'll talk about that today.
Yeah, so I think one thing that comes up top of mind for me, Margaret, is, you know, and this was a huge buzzword when it first came out there, but emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Like understanding not just yourself, being able to see what's happening for the other person, and how do you respond the right way to how you're feeling or how the other person is feeling in real time. These are parts of skills that everyone should learn, whether you call it soft skills or what have you, because these are skills that you're going to use regardless of whether you're working in a career or just at home, you know, and that's a significant part of communication, especially if there's a disagreement involved.
Very, very good point. Well, let's take a quick break, and then let's come back and talk a little bit more about emotional intelligence and active listening. So we'll be back in just a few moments. We're here with Philip Blackett talking about his book, Disagree Without Disrespect, How to Respectfully Debate with Those Who Think, Believe, and Vote Differently from You. Be back in a moment.
Did you know that more than 54% of Americans fight with people close to them because of stress? That people with positive social relationships recover from illness faster? And that people who have a best friend at work are 7 times more likely to be engaged in their jobs? The Relationship Code teaches us to empower ourselves in all types of relationships with the new techniques and insights of the 4-step harmonic matching process. The harmonic process integrates psychology with universal principles to help people achieve their desires. In the Relationship Code, you'll learn to create positive, self-fulfilling prophecies, communicate effectively, enhance relationships on the job, overcome everyday and long-term challenges, and develop extraordinary outcomes. Published by Career Press and available now, you can go to www.margaretmacraw.com or call 410-366-9111 to order the book. Are you interested in a board-certified coach training program specializing in the law of attraction? If so, become a board-certified life and business coach, as well as a holistic health practitioner, and help others live their dreams. If you're ready for a new and exciting career, you should visit www.tuneintolove.com to learn more about board-certified training programs specializing in the law of attraction. This could be perfect if you're one of those people that likes helping others. Do friends, family members, and colleagues come to you for advice? And are you good at helping others solve difficult problems? If so, this board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction could be just for you. Go to tuneintolove.com to find out more. You could be your own boss and working out of your own home with a very flexible schedule, in addition to the ability to make so much more money and have so much more free time. Visit www.tuneintolove.com and find out more about the board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction. Would you like to transcend patterns in your life that inhibit you from attracting true love? Begin creating strong, fulfilling relationships that are long-lasting. Margaret McCraw's book, Tune Into Love, can give you a positive start and an exciting new process for attracting the loving partner you seek. Tune Into Love will also teach you 4 essential steps for focusing your thoughts, emotions, and beliefs to create all of your desires. Learn how to sidestep the self-imposed roadblocks that hold you from fulfillment. In addition to attracting and creating a fulfilling relationship, Tune Into Love will show you how to attract better health, fulfilling careers, abundance of money, and harmony in all aspects of your life. Order your copy today at www.tuneintolove.com or call 877-366-9111 or visit the website tuneintolove.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCall, host of Business Life Works. We are here today talking with Philip Blackett, the author of Disagree Without Disrespect. Philip, can your book be bought wherever books are sold, or is there a special place they should go to get your book?
Yeah, I would say so. Primarily, I would go to Amazon at this point. We're looking to put in more bookstores outside of Amazon, but Amazon.com, I would say, is your best place to find it.
Okay, sounds great. And then your website is philipblackett.com, and Philip is spelled with one L, P-H-I-L-I-P, and then Blackett, B-L-A-C-K-E-T-T.com. So, Philip, on your website, is there anything you want to point out to our listeners of what they might find?
Yeah, I think you'll find more about myself and why I do what I do, maybe some of the other interviews I've done with regards to talking about the book and the importance of being able to respectfully disagree with one another. It's also another place where you can connect with me on social media as well if you'd like to continue the conversation, post this, you know, conversation we're having.
Okay. Sounds good. Great. Well, on this topic, let's talk a little bit more about emotional intelligence, if you want to address that in terms of how critical it is, how important it is, and even define what it is for our listeners in terms of being able to disagree thoughtfully and respectfully.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, emotional intelligence, everyone can clearly understand what IQ is. But EQ is for emotional intelligence. A big part of it is self-awareness. And so it's understanding how you're currently feeling at the point in time, and then also how do you respond for yourself, right? A good example in a debate is if you're having a conversation and things are taking a more aggressive tone, and maybe you're starting to feel a little defensive in your own sense, and that being able to first recognize that, not be aloof to it, is helpful, because then if you're saying, hey, I'm noticing I'm a little on the defensive side, I'm starting to get a little tense, I'm feeling my voice starting to increase in volume and intensity, now it becomes the case of, what do I do about that? You know, I don't want this to go get personal. I don't want us to devolve into name-calling. Now it's, what is your response going to be in this example? Where it might be the sense where you might say, hey, let's go down a different route with this conversation. I know we're getting a little tense here. Maybe it might be one to say, hey, can I just take a quick break or breather, just a reset? Or it might be something altogether that says, hey, you know what, maybe this isn't the right time for us to have this conversation. Can we postpone this to another time where we're both more level-headed about what's going on there? So being able to understand that for yourself is helpful, because then that parlays into how you're able to be aware of the other person and what he or she is feeling. Mm-hmm. And then seeing it in the sense of not only trying to respond to your own emotions, but what's the right way for you to respond to somebody else's emotional state that could be helpful to move the conversation down a positive route versus a negative route.
Good point. Very good point. Well, and that requires active listening, doesn't it? To even
Absolutely.
Tap into that.
Absolutely. So active listening is the sense of really being present in the conversation. Like, nothing else matters at this point for me than what Margaret and I are speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so being able to hear more about what you're saying and less about thinking in the back of my head, okay, what am I going to say next? Ooh, she said something. I really want to come back at her on this. Being able to ask clarifying questions. Because the other part of it too, Margaret, is oftentimes for somebody to share their ideas or their perspective on something, we should actually treat it as a gift. Because oftentimes, they already know what they're thinking. This might be the first time that you're becoming aware of what they're thinking, though. And so for them to share with you, you ought to treat it in some sense almost like a present they gave to you. And we don't want to go about smashing the present in front of them. You know,
right.
We want to take good care of it. Because oftentimes, how we treat somebody in the conversation can often predicate if future conversations will be had between us.
Right.
Or if that person will be likely wanting to talk to us afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, active listening skills are not skills that are taught in school. If they're not taught at home, where would people learn them unless they go into the field of counseling and their counseling program emphasizes it, which some have not and some have. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about what that skill set, a little bit more detail about that, and what your thoughts are in terms of where people would learn active listening skills if they haven't developed them.
Right. So this is definitely one that, like you said before, I wasn't taught necessarily in school. I didn't take a class on active listening in college or graduate school for that matter. So for me, a lot of what I've learned about it was either through books I might have gotten in bookstores growing up, or nowadays going to somewhere like YouTube and just searching for active listening to see what comes up in that sort. And the other part I would say too, Margaret, is that, you know, a lot of it is introspection from the standpoint of asking yourself, how would you want to be listened to when you have a conversation with someone? Because our own experience is a wealth of knowledge to understand, you know, who are the people that you feel like you can trust with your thoughts? And asking yourself, why is that the case? What is it about that person that you feel more at ease, you feel safe, you feel listened to, and what were those behaviors like? And whether or not it's something that you can model yourself so that the same type of positive experience you got from that person, you can extend to somebody else and then also model it to somebody else so you can replicate that positive experience for you as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's a very good point. So, you know, when we think about the whole thing with debating or disagreeing, what do you feel are the biggest challenges that people face when they're trying to disagree respectfully?
So some of the biggest challenges that come up is, one, you know, this framework itself, it seems common sense. I also would say common sense isn't common. So in comparison to what we're seeing, you know, in our TVs, our music, our movies, culture in general, is not pushing this type of message as far as how to best go about disagreements. It might be
mm-hmm.
And so trying to find the right way to go about this can be a challenge.
Got it. Absolutely. We have to take another break. Geez, time is flying by here, Philip. So let's take a moment. We'll break, and then we'll come back. We're talking today with Philip Blackett about his book, Disagreeing Without Disrespect. Stay tuned.
Are you interested in a board-certified coach training program specializing in the law of attraction? If so, become a board-certified life and business coach, as well as a holistic health practitioner, and help others live their dreams. If you're ready for a new and exciting career, you should visit www.tuneintolove.com to learn more about board-certified training programs specializing in the law of attraction. This could be perfect if you're one of those people that likes helping others. Do friends, family members, and colleagues come to you for advice? And are you good at helping others solve difficult problems? If so, this board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction could be just for you. Go to tuneintolove.com to find out more. You could be your own boss and working out of your own home with a very flexible schedule, in addition to the ability to make so much more money and have so much more free time. visit www.tuneintolove.com and find out more about the board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCall, host of Business Life Works. We're here today talking with Philip Blackett. Philip, why don't you give your website and tell our listeners where they can find your book?
Sure. So you can find my book on Amazon. Just look up the title, Disagree Without Disrespect. How to respectfully debate with those who think, believe, and vote differently from you. And if the title's kind of long, which I understand, you can actually just look it up via my name as far as the author, Philip Blackett, P-H-I-L-I-P-B-L-A-C-K-E-T-T. And you can also access it through my website, philipblackett.com.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. So let's talk a little bit about when it's okay to just walk away from a disagreement.
Right. So I think part of it,
when it might be necessary to walk away, too.
I agree. So I think part of it is thinking, you know, once again, we talked about a little bit about what's the objective of us having the conversation. What are we trying to achieve? And one way to look at this is if we're veering off of what the objective is, let's see if we can reset it to get back to what we were trying to accomplish. Or if one person is just resolute and not going down that line, then that might be one we might have to say, hey, you know, maybe this is not the right time for us to have this conversation. So a key indicator would be, as we mentioned before, if one gets started in name calling. And if it's something where someone is getting more emotional, maybe making over-emotional responses or reactions where it can get pretty heated or intense, then the thought becomes, okay, once again, can we get back to what we were trying to do, which is talk about the issue at hand? Or if things are getting personal, we might just say, hey, listen, I didn't want to get into a fight with you. I don't want to go in that back-and-forth argument. Either we can get back to what we were trying to accomplish, or we can just go ahead and depart and move on from this. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, people have choices in what they do with their lives, with their time, and who they have conversations with. And you're more than capable to say, hey, listen, either mm-hmm. this is a conversation that's worthwhile for me to engage in, or one that may not be fruitful for us to actually get some sort of good value out of, that may make sense for us to move forward and move on to something else.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice way of putting it. So what do you feel are some of the common mistakes that people make when they're disagreeing with others?
So I think one of the common mistakes is understanding that, you know, there's no ego involved. So it gets back to that first step, right, separating the idea or belief from the identity of the believer. Everyone has a sense of, you know, how they look at themselves, what their ego is like in the conversation, and sometimes it may be helpful for us to check our ego at the door when it comes to having this conversation. Mm-hmm. Because if we're looking at this from a sense of trying to keep the issue the main issue, then that's where we're making this more objective. you know, we can include how it impacts us, maybe our personal experiences, why we feel the way we feel. But if we can try to get more from the sense of more out of curiosity to understand the other person, the other perspective, and be able to engage in reciprocity to share our part as well afterwards, that will be much more helpful as opposed to figuring out how do I look good in this scenario? How do I come off on top, or more superior, or more of a focus on I have to be right in this scenario versus how can we move forward more connected in our relationship together?
That's a good way to put it. How can we move forward more connected? Yeah, I like that. That's in your own mind, you're setting the intention that you want to be connected. You're not looking to separate from your friend or family member. You're wanting to stay connected.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the, you know, the difference between a healthy debate and somebody who just kind of agrees and is somewhat dismissive, okay? They're agreeable to be agreeable, or they're just dismissive.
Mm-hmm. So I think part of what goes on here is, you know, a lot of us are conflict avoidant, right? We're more risk averse, and we don't want to risk getting into a back and forth fight or argument that could get pretty intense or maybe even violent as a result, right? And so many people may want to agree to just move on or dismiss something. And the challenge is that we're basically just playing at the surface of the conversation. Because what we want to do is understand that everyone has a viewpoint on just about everything to some degree. It's just a matter of how much are you going to learn about that? And what has to happen is you have to help co-create a space where you can dig a little deeper, where you can ask questions that go beneath the surface, and people feel like it's okay to be more open with you, where it's okay to be a little vulnerable here, and also understand that with them being vulnerable with you, if it's received the right way where they feel it's okay to do that, then they're more likely to continue being vulnerable. But the moment where they feel like it's not safe, or they feel like they're at risk of being made fun of or attacked or dismissed, then that person may be more likely to keep it superficial, more likely to just agree just so we can move on with something. But they never truly give you the gift of their honest opinion and their candid viewpoint on that particular topic or issue.
Yeah, you know, you really, when you talk about debating, you're bringing so much stuff into a discussion, right? You're bringing in your personality, you're bringing in any issues that you might have with conflict. If you're somebody who grew up in a household where you couldn't disagree and never had anybody role model healthy disagreement, then you're bringing that into those conversations as well. And I can see where people avoid, but they have a lot of anger about what they're avoiding, right? And so much stuff, there's so much psychology with this topic. There's just a lot of stuff. People have a lot of stuff, right, they're dealing with personally. And it all the surface when there's a disagreement.
Right, and to your point, Margaret, I would say, too, we all have lived a good amount of our lives that are replete with personal experiences. So we have to understand that we have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, there's a lot more to the table than what someone's initially saying. So we have to be mindful of that.
Yes, always. Yes. Absolutely. Well, let's take a break. We have one more segment at the end, so stay tuned, listeners. We'll be back in just a moment with Philip Blackett talking about how to have healthy disagreements.
Are you interested in a board-certified coach training program specializing in the law of attraction? If so, become a board-certified life and business coach, as well as a holistic health practitioner, and help others live their dreams. If you're ready for a new and exciting career, you should visit www.tuneintolove.com to learn more about board-certified training programs specializing in the law of attraction. This could be perfect if you're one of those people that likes helping others. The friends, family members, and colleagues come to you for advice, and are you good at helping others solve difficult problems? If so, this board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction could be just for you. Go to tuneintolove.com to find out more. You could be your own boss and working out of your own home with a very flexible schedule, in addition to the ability to make so much more money and have so much more free time. Visit www.tuneintolove.com and find out more about the board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcasting coders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Would you like to transcend patterns in your life that inhibit you from attracting true love? Begin creating strong, fulfilling relationships that are long-lasting. Margaret McCraw's book, Tune Into Love, can give you a positive start and an exciting new process for attracting the loving partner you seek. Tune Into Love will also teach you four essential steps for focusing your thoughts, emotions, and beliefs to create all of your desires. Learn how to sidestep the self-imposed roadblocks that hold you from fulfillment. In addition to attracting and creating a fulfilling relationship, Tune Into Love will show you how to attract better health, fulfilling careers, abundance of money, and harmony in all aspects of your life. Order your copy today at www.tuneintolove.com or call 877-366-9111 or visit the website tuneintolove.com.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw, host of Business Life Works. We are talking with Philip Blackett today about his book, Disagree Without Disrespect. And there's a long subtitle attached to that, but Disagree Without Disrespect. That is what I want you to remember. You can buy his book on Amazon. And Philip, your website is philipblackett.com. And Philip is spelled with one L. I'm sure they will find you on Amazon. So this topic of disagreeing with people without disrespecting them is so important, especially today with the politics. I mean, even just to watch the news and some of the interviews, you know, you can observe people being interviewed and feeling on the defense and how the conversation goes, and it doesn't always end well. I know sometimes in watching the news, I just have to flip it off and go to something, you know, turn on some nice music, because it can be unpleasant to watch and to observe, as well as when you're participating in a disagreement. Yet it doesn't have to be that way. Disagreements are healthy. We need to have disagreements. We all know that. Even in an organizational setting, when we have a team working on a project and everybody agrees, we're missing out. We need the people on that team who are saying, hey, what about this? Or tell me why you chose to do that. Or, you know, this doesn't make sense to me. Tell me a little bit more. We need people who are questioning us, because that helps us to stop, to pause, and really look at ourselves, look at our decision-making, and to be more diverse and well-rounded and think through whatever it is. If you're building a car or you're building a computer or you're your team is working on enhancing productivity in the workplace. It doesn't matter. We need diversity. We need disagreements so that we can really process things and iron out the problems and get to an excellent either product or service. And so this topic is critical, and yet most of us never learned healthy ways to disagree. We never learned that. We either figured some of this out by mistakes, usually, you know, or we never figured anything out, and we continue to disagree in a way that's disrespectful and turns people off. So I love your topic. This is wonderful that we're getting into this. Let's talk a little bit, Philip, a little more about your book. Some of the chapters that you have, and the third one is of interest. It's called The Intellectual Evolution. You want to talk about that for a moment and tell us what's in that chapter?
Yes, I think part of what goes on there is just how do we come about this? Because like you said before, Margaret, you know, disagreements, that's not what's new here. It's more so how do we go about it in a way, you know, that's respectful, you know, especially in a culture that's evolved or, dare I say, devolved in a much lesser form on how we go about different points of view and, you know, for lack thereof and that sort that would make it more unpleasant, as you said before, to watch such debates on TV nowadays versus what it might have been previously. And I think part of the thing when it comes to intellectual evolution is also understanding that there is a possibility that people can have certain biases that may be in the way of someone truly getting to know your point of view and giving it the best chance of consideration, and also understanding that, you know, what can often happen when it comes to intellectual evolution is, you know, you might come across a new piece of information that might actually change your mind, and that it's not seen, nor should it be seen, as a weakness that if you come across new information, Margaret, that now you have a different opinion, or now you make a different decision. Because we do that whether in the classroom, whether we do that in the living room as parents, or as leaders in the workplace, where you think a certain way based off what you know of currently. And as Maya Angelou once said, you know, if we know better, we do better. And so what's incumbent about that is if we come across something that further educates us towards doing something differently, then that is a good thing to take a different line of action. And that shouldn't be seen as a bad thing, even if it means going from one side of the argument potentially to the other side.
That's a good point. Absolutely. Well, how about the biases that people come with? Bias, your chapter is called Bias Barriers and Debate Bridges. Why don't you talk about that for a moment? Because people come with lots of biases.
Absolutely. Like we were talking about right before we went to break about, you know, people come in with a lot of stuff, right? We come with our histories, our past experiences, philosophies. We were thinking about our worldviews and that sort of thing. And one of the things that we think about is whether there's a bias that we have that might prevent us internally to be fully open to a different point of view. Maybe we have a sense of confirmation bias, for example, that essentially is looking for anything that confirms or validates what we're already thinking of. And we're much more willing to repel or reject anything that works on the opposite end. And so what happens there is we become so wedded to that point of view that we're not even at least open to hearing other people out, right? Mm. And so I think that is one that's a big bias, because essentially what's going on there is you're going to likely surround yourself with similar people, similar media sources, similar networks that basically give you essentially what you're looking for to fortify and confirm what ideas are important to you that you want to subscribe to. And it becomes much more foreign for you then to come across somebody that has a different point of view and a different way of looking at things.
That's a good point. Wow. Well, you also have a chapter called The Alchemy of Logic and Empathy. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I think that's dealing with both sides of our brain, right? So we have an emotional side and a rational side. And both are important when it comes to our conversations with people. And it's not one where we should, you know, celebrate one side of it and shun the other. It should be more so the sense of understanding that when we engage in people conversations, we have to also include the fact that we're dealing with, you know, feelings as well as facts. And it's not so much choosing one or the other. It's not an either or. It's more of a both and. And so understanding that going into a conversation, you know, is also understanding how do we present the logic, but also how are we sensitive to the emotion to be empathetic towards somebody else and what he or she is thinking as well. So it's more of an art than a science, more of a dance that should be helpful for us to better understand one another in the conversation.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Well, your book, I think our listeners should certainly explore your book. Go to Philip's website, www.philipblackett.com, and that's spelled, Blackett is spelled B-L-A-C-K-E-T-T, and Philip is P-H-I-L-I-P, philipblackett.com. Philip, we have to wrap up. This has been a fascinating conversation, a very, very important conversation to have, especially today, especially with all the family and friendship debates about politics and many other things going on in the world, and certainly personal things going on in people's families where they're debating how to handle this or that, and certainly parents who are debating constantly on how to handle their children or manage issues with their children. So thank you for the time and effort you took to write this beautiful book. We are going to wrap up right now, so in terms of your website again, www.philipblackett.com, and the name of his book is Disagree Without Disrespect, How to Respectfully Debate with Those Who Think, Believe, and Vote Differently from You. Thank you for being on my show, Philip.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yes. All right. And to my listeners, we'll see you next month.